Hello and welcome back to another Worcestershire podcast. This is Wisteria Lane, where we're covering Desperate Housewives and all the happenings on Wisteria Lane. We're covering episodes 5 and 6 of season 1 in this episode here. So I'll hand over to my sisters in a second to do a quick recap of those episodes. But before I do, our long-time listeners will know that we have a motto here. Our motto is, if attempted murder is a crime, then attempted comedy is a podcast. I'm Suna.
I'm Sadie.
And I'm Arzum.
And Arzum, could you recap episode 5 for us real quick?
I sure can. The episode features, I was about to say Suna instead of Sue, because I don't know why I wrote Sue instead of Susan. She never goes by
Sue. Yeah, you literally said Sue when you were reading out your notes, and I was like, oh, that's an interesting name.
Yeah, I don't know why I wrote Sue, because no one refers to her
as Sue. Probably as shorthand. I've been writing everyone's initials as shorthand. S does this, J does that.
Who's J?
Jeanette. Oh, Lynette. No, Lynette. I keep accidentally calling her Jeanette in my notes and then fixing it. I think it's because I just finished reading Jeanette McCurdy's book, and so the name Jeanette is stuck in my mind.
Yeah. Sue, a.k.a. Susan, has been cat-sitting, and we find out a break-in happens in the house that she's cat-sitting at. So this leads into a community watch program thing that's happening amongst the street. Bree decides she's going to have Christmas in July, and she starts spending some more time with Zachary Young. And Gabrielle's mother-in-law comes to town to visit, Mama Solis. And lastly, Lynette is trying to get her kids into a private school called the Briarcliff Academy.
Great. And Sadie, did you want to give us a quick recap of episode 6?
In this episode, we sort of see the ladies doing their own thing. We see Lynette getting hands-on with her son's school play. And then we see Bree fix things and rectify things with Rex. We see Susan Susan is becoming the world's worst PI. And Gabby is still dealing with Mama Solis. But on the other side, we've got some very odd happenings with Mary Alice Young's family.
Great. So one thing that we're going to do, which is what we typically do on this show, is go through each of the characters' storylines individualized to them. So instead of talking about the show in the chronological order of it airing, we're going to talk about each character and kind of what happened to them. So who did you guys want to start with today?
Should we do Susan?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll start with Susan.
So main things that are happening to Susan in episode 5 is basically, like I said, she's cat-sitting for someone called Alberta Frome. And when she goes over to feed the cat, she notices that a drawer is open. So obviously someone has broken in. She couldn't ever leave a drawer open in her life. Basically, she calls the cops and there's a community watch program happening. Everyone's meeting together to talk about how to keep the neighborhood safe. And she ends up going on a date with a cop.
Officer Thompson.
Officer Thompson, that's right.
Yeah. So can I just start off with saying that I'm really glad the cat was okay.
Yeah, me
too. I was really worried when they came into the house and the cat wasn't around. And I was like, where is this cat? What's happened to the cat? I was glad to see that the cat was okay.
Well, I thought it was very sweet that the, you know, the person who broke in returned the cat safely. Yeah.
Well, we do know who the person that broke in was, we think.
We know.
Are you questioning or are you stating?
No, I'm stating that we know. You made it sound like a question. We know it was
well,
Mike.
Well, I was just confirming because I've seen the show before and you haven't. But it was pretty clear in this that we know who it is, right? It was Mike.
Yeah, you could even tell by the shoes.
Yeah, no, that's true. I watched it with my husband and he did say, oh, that's the hot plumber, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because those are plumbing shoes.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it was Mike. And then he's kind of panicking throughout this episode that he's going to be found out. So I was about to say he didn't confess to it, but yes, he kind of did, didn't he? When he was talking to that, when he was talking to that mystery guy. Okay, cool. Yep, on the same page. I forgot about that scene for a second.
Yeah. I liked the small segment that we see about how Susan's it just adds to her quirky personality. So basically Susan's really bad luck and everyone knows it. So like knocking over her own trash can, that's bad luck, you know, not bad driving for one. You know, she's ruining yes. someone's literal wedding by flying face first into their cake and giggling.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, she's so quirky and different. She's got attacked by a bird.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we first started this show, I didn't realize why you guys hated Susan so much, but I think I'm starting to get it. Like, that opening scene where it shows that she's got bad luck, it's not bad luck, she's just an idiot.
It's just a lack of care. Who leans on someone's wedding cake table?
I know.
Like, honestly, Susan.
Literally. And then she's, like, giggling as she's getting up, like, hee hee.
Yeah, because it's cute.
Like, I just ruined someone's wedding. This cake was thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I have to apologize for my Whisperia Lane episode 1 comments regarding Susan. I think, no, you guys are 100% on the ball. She is the worst.
Yeah.
I remember you saying she was magic and no one
can
touch her.
They were your words.
She was cute.
Let me put it out there. She is cute. She's just hella annoying.
Yeah.
She's a beautiful woman. She just is not someone I would be friends with.
Whenever I see her now, though, I think of her from Seinfeld.
Oh, yes. I've almost forgot about that. She's the one with the boobs, right?
Yeah, the one with the boobs. She breasted boobily just like Edie.
The one where at the end of the episode, she's like, by the way, they're real and they're fabulous.
They're real? Yeah.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy, silly, goofy Susan finds a screwdriver in this house where the break-in has happened. And that's her main source of evidence.
No, but she's adamant that it means something. And you know what? It hurts to see that no one believes her, like even the local police force.
Yeah, this is what bugged me. I'm like, okay, someone has broken in. They haven't stolen anything, whatever. But if you're like, this screwdriver wasn't here before and I haven't touched it or anything, you should probably run it to see if you know who broke in. And they laugh at her. Like, that's actually dumb. Someone would be taking care of that.
Agree. Well, I guess that Officer Thompson, when he turned out to be a lying jerk in the end, the thing he did say was that it was a waste of resources because it takes lab time and whatever. But they could have explained that in the first instance instead of telling her she was an idiot.
Officer Thompson, who was giving them a bit of a safety instruction at, like, Lynette's house or something, basically be a neighborhood watch because the police can't be there all the time. And he has been eyeing off Susan this whole time. He's, like, giving a safety talk about, like, not dying, and he's just, like, staring into Susan's eyes.
Yeah. And Gabby's like, trust me, when they don't look at me, I notice.
Gabby's funny. Yeah, the next day, I think it's the next day anyway, Susan's, like, being silly, goofy Susan again, and she's, like, accidentally hosing herself off while she's, you know, hosing her garden. And Officer McFriendly comes over again and is just like, hey, just wanted to make sure you're all safe, and letting you know I took that screwdriver down to the lab because she gave the screwdriver to him during the neighborhood watch meeting. So she's like, just letting you know, I came down here to let you know that I sent off that screwdriver, and also please go out with me. If not, I'm not going to be a very good negotiator and people are going to die.
Yeah. I thought this scene was really cute because she knew that he didn't really get a distress call.
He was joking. Yeah.
I actually thought it was really cute. And I was like, she should date him instead of Mike because he has a personality. But
he's a Carl in disguise.
But he's a Carl in disguise, exactly. We didn't know that till the end, but
I thought the banter they had was really good.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I think that's the other thing that's happening for Susan in these episodes, right? Her relationship with Mike is a bit hot and cold. She doesn't know where he stands. So one day they're going to, like, dinner parties together. The next day he's not sitting with her when they're at the neighborhood watch meeting.
Okay, but that's probably because
this is on her. This is on her.
Like, okay, one at a time, like, guys. One at a time. I can sense everyone has an opinion on this.
Okay, Sadie, you go.
Well, that's her problem because, like, yes, they went to a dinner party, and then directly after the dinner party, she shoves Edie into his lap and sends him on a date.
Yes, very true. Very true.
And before that, she declined him going, like, declined the first date he asked her out on. So she's like, let me decline. I'm not going to go out with you. You know, we're just friends to everyone who asks. Yeah. And then, yes, let's go on a date, but date Edie instead.
Yeah, literally true.
Like, she's the one sending mixed signals.
Yeah.
Agree. Yeah, and then she has the audacity to tell someone later in this episode that he's sending mixed signals. Like, no, honey, he's not. That's you.
Yeah. So I fully agree with all of that. But anyway, because of these mixed signals, she's unsure of whether Mike wants to date her or not. So she's, like, trying to decide what to do with this cop. And at first she said no because, you know, it's complicated, I guess. But
she's
then
kind of not available.
Yeah, she's kind of not available. But then she goes to test it with Mike. And she approaches it with him in the weirdest way. Like, instead of saying to him, like, oh, do you want to see other people or not, kind of a thing, mm-hmm. she starts with saying, I'm going on a date with this guy. What do you think of that? Like, it's like you've already made the decision. What do you want him to say? Do you want him to, like, scream in a fit of jealousy? Like, what do you want him to say when the thing you go to him with is, I've already made up my mind and I'm going out with this guy. Are you jealous or not? Like, how is he supposed to react to that? As I said, like, a mature person would be like, hey, you're sending me kind of mixed signals here. I don't know how serious you are, or do you want to date exclusively? Should I, you know, are you open to seeing other people or not? But instead she's like, I'm going to see this policeman. Take that.
Okay. It was so weird. I hated it.
Like, she goes over to talk to him, and then she says, and I quote, what's your opinion on this? And she, like, back to back repeats the same thing. What's your opinion on me dating? Why would he have an opinion on you dating when you've been out together to one party, have kissed once, and, like, nothing else has happened? Like, the last time you saw each other, you were literally throwing Edie in his lap.
They haven't even kissed once yet, have they? That's at the end of next episode. So it's like, you haven't even had that. You went to dinner once and now you're acting crazy.
Yeah, that's true. But he did tell her that she looked wow.
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 No, that is true. I forgot about the fact that they hadn't even kissed yet at this point.
Yeah, like, there's nothing there for him to have an opinion on. So she's sort of, like, going there with the expectations of him sort of being like, oh, no, don't do it. I'm in love with you. Like, are you crazy?
Yeah, that is a very valid point.
Well, she does say to Lynette that she is crazy, and a guy looks at her one time and she falls in love. So
yeah,
at least she knows her own red flags.
She does.
What's your – also, can we just – like, mentioned the fact that as the scene was panning out, it stops and shows that there's one missing screwdriver in the set.
Yes.
Actually, I wanted to point out there's two missing screwdrivers from the set. The one on the end is also not there.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that.
It does zoom into one, and it's meant to make you focus on that one is missing. But because I had paused it to go to the bathroom, and I came back and I was like, wait a minute, there's two missing.
Just how many houses has this guy broken into?
I know. That's his calling card.
All right. So because she's so adamant about this screwdriver, you think she would be a little bit more wary about Mike's stuff hanging on the wall, like, 3 feet away from her face? Like, you can see, like, that's a whole set and one of them is missing, and it looks exactly like the rest of them look exactly like the one that you've picked up. Like, she could have just noticed that right then and there, but no.
To be fair, she wasn't in the garage.
Yeah, but also, she's not expecting that it be Mike, so she's not on the lookout for things.
He's hot. He can't be him.
So I guess then Susan is, she ends up going on this date with this Officer McFriendly guy, and it's all going really good until she notices that the screwdriver that she told him to send in for sampling, and he said he did, is still in his boot, and he hadn't actually taken it anywhere. So she gets real mad and realizes that he's a Carl in disguise, so he's a liar. Instead of going back home with him like a normal person, she decides to get off at a random street, and she has no phone, no anything. Decides to just risk it on the street corner.
She was making a point, you guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd rather make a point after I'm safe.
I know.
Because it didn't seem like they were in a good part of town, because he was on...
No, they made several comments about it, that it was like Cracktown USA or something.
Yeah, and he was there on watch. Like, it was the end of his shift. She was hanging out with him until he finished his shift.
But luckily she finds a very friendly, like, prostitute on the street corner.
Yeah.
Who lets her use her phone.
Yeah.
That was my favourite.
I know, I really like this. The thing that I like is when she was standing on the corner and someone drove up and thought she was a prostitute, instead of correcting them, she was like, I'm on a break.
Yeah.
Thank you, I'm on break.
Yeah, I really love that.
Yeah, that was funny.
But to be fair, it's the quicker response instead of having to try and explain yourself, right? And so I guess this is also before there was, like, the proliferation of mobile phones and stuff. So she borrows the street person's mobile phone and calls, I'm guessing, the only number that she knew, which is Julie's at home, and said, hey, can you get somebody to pick me up? And this is why it's really important to have good relationships with your neighbours, I guess, because Julie just had to run out and find any neighbour and be like, can you go pick up my mum?
Julie, She's in Cracktown, USA. I feel like this is probably some cunning on Julie's behalf because we've seen her scheme to get her mum and Mike together before. But Julie decides to send Mike.
And he pulls down the window and he's like, how much for a trip around the world?
Yeah, I know. At least he had humour about it.
Yeah.
Like, it was a very lighthearted scene, and I liked it. Like, they could have gone a complete different direction with that scene, but I liked the way that it panned out.
Mm.
How good would it have been if she got killed, though?
Yeah.
Not very.
I think it would be excellent if she got killed.
Artem just went from one extreme to the next. Like, mate, what's going on?
She'd be fighting with Mary Alice Young about who's going to narrate the episodes.
Exactly.
So...
But Susan won't make her. She'll keep falling down the stairway to heaven.
That's true. So clumsy. So when Susan gets into the car, she kind of dumps the screwdriver there too that she took because she's still hanging onto this screwdriver with dear life. Yeah. And Mike's noticed it and he's like, oh, I thought that was at the lab. And she's like, no, he's a jerk and he lied to me. And I think we see that Mike is relieved because this means he isn't getting caught. Because we have seen that Mike was kind of panicked about the fact that he was about to be caught out for breaking into the house. We also saw in that scene where he was talking to a mystery old man that he's here and he's looking for something and he doesn't want to cause a disturbance in Wisteria Lane yet.
The Force.
In the Force and on Wisteria Lane. Mysteria Lane.
Or Mysteria Lane. That's such a good one.
That's what we should have done.
I know, that's what we should have named our show.
I know.
All right, so the next time we see Susan, she's watching Paul, and she seems a little sus about him, but she can't put her finger on it.
Yeah, so she decides to follow Paul in this car that she's guilted her neighbour into lending her, and she finds out that Zach's been going to this show's equivalent of... This show's equivalent of Radley, which I think is called Silvercrest. She comes back home and she's telling Julie about it, and they decide to come up with this scheme where Julie's going to sneak in and visit him. So Susan's going to be a distraction. She's pretending to meet with someone from there because she's working on a children's book. And while the assistant is fetching the doctor, Julie runs in and pretends that she belongs there, I guess. And she runs into Zach's room, which she miraculously knows exactly where it is. He starts saying some weird mystery stuff, and it includes he said something about he hurt Dana, and Julie's like, who the hell is Dana? But one of the nurses comes in and realizes she's there and shoos her out, so she doesn't get to find out the answer. Susan's actually maybe a little bit closer to finding out who Dana is than she thinks, because Paul Young is having a garage sale because he's desperate to get out of there before anyone finds out about his creepy lake body.
Toy box, human remains.
Yeah. So he's like doing a fire sale basically. But also, if you're hiding a bunch of secrets, maybe go through the shit you're selling it with a finer tooth comb. I don't know what's going on with him. But one of the things that Susan purchases includes a baby blanket which has the name Dana embroidered on the side. And she just kind of gets home and chucks it on like her rocking chair or something. And at the end of the episode, we zoom in into that baby blanket and what's written on it. That's all that happens to Susan in these two episodes?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, let's go, Lynette.
Lynette starts off these first couple of episodes, these couple of episodes, by asking Bree to vouch for her kids at a prestigious primary school called Barcliff.
Yep.
What's it called?
Barcliff, yeah.
Barcliff, yeah. And Bree is apprehensive to say the least, but I like that little exchange.
Yeah.
Bree was all like, I was hoping to get my grandkids into there, but you know, I'll help you out.
Yeah.
And Bree lied about the kids' behavior to get them an interview.
Yeah. The first thing that they need to do is do an observation of the kids, apparently, and Lynette's freaking out because she knows her kids are kind of a challenge, as Bree says.
Yeah.
So she does her best to tire them out through the day. She gets them to, like, dig a hole with no purpose. gets them to just her kids are absolutely tuckered out by the time she brings them for the observation, to the point where the
principal is asking if her kids are always that docile, which was
yeah, like her kids are falling asleep in front of the puzzle and she's like, oh, they love puzzles, so concentrated,
yeah,
so fixated.
I wonder though how long she thinks this can last, because like, I don't know, I would be worried that they're gonna find out in the first week my kids are a brat and kick them out anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Anyway, the interview for Lynette's kids goes well. And it's a toss-up between Lynette's kids and another family.
Mm.
And in order to sort of give them the edge that they need, Lynette and her husband need to come up with $15,000 as a donation to the school just to guarantee the kids' spots. Yeah, so when she's having that conversation with her husband, he mentions that they don't have that sort of money to give. They don't know what to do. And he mentions homeschooling to her. When she, you know, sort of like poo-poos the idea, she's sort of like, no, I can't do homeschooling with them.
Yeah.
He says to her, you need to sacrifice.
I know. Freaking Tom.
Yeah, this got to me. Like, how much more is this woman going to sacrifice? She's like giving you four kids in the space of like 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, leave her alone. Why don't you sacrifice some?
Exactly. And it's easy for him to say when he's not the one doing it. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, you're going to have to sacrifice. But he just goes, works his 9-to-5 jobs, has margaritas with his friends, and then comes home sometimes. It's not even like he wasn't aware of this, because I feel like as soon as she raised it to him, he took a step back and was like, no. Because she started off the conversation after she had the idea of selling his boat. She started off the conversation with like, oh, I've been thinking, like, I've sacrificed enough. I gave up my career. From what I remember, I was earning a bit more than you. So why don't you stay home and homeschool the kids and I'll go back to work. And immediately he's like, no, I'll go crazy. So he knows what a sacrifice it is.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's, yeah, he just doesn't care. And the way that she was raising it, I really loved how she was staring at the photo of the boat and she was like, where would we get that money? Think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it for episode 5. In the next episode, which is episode 6, we see that Lynette's efforts have paid off and her kids are in the school. In fact, they're doing well to have got a play, to get parts in the play as oak trees. Yeah, it's my favorite. So, the first time we see Lynette here is she's having a taking part of what seems to be like a theater PTA mum group thing for like the theater volunteers. And she finds out that the it girl in that group, what's her name? Maisie Gibbons. Maisie Gibbons decides that she's going to be changing the ending of the play that the kids are going to be doing, which is Little Red Riding Hood. So the wolf is no longer going to die in the end, but in fact, it's going to have a thorn in his paw that the huntsman is going to remove.
And Lynette doesn't like this, so she wants to keep the original ending because, you know, she likes it. It's what it's meant to be. And she tries to kind of voice her opinion, but Maisie shoots her down. Well, there's clearly a hierarchy at this school, and Maisie is the queen. So nobody's willing to kind of speak up to Maisie. And then Maisie kind of criticizes Lynette about her contribution as well. So Lynette's apparently volunteered to kind of take tickets on opening night. And Maisie says, well, why don't we leave the criticizing to the parents that are doing the heavy lifting around here? Yeah. And so Lynette's looking for a bit of support and nobody's willing to speak up to Maisie. She rules the school. And it sounds like she has for a while. Like, I don't know how many kids she's got and how long they've been in there, but it sounds like when they talk to Bree later, when Lynette's like kind of telling Bree about this later, Bree's like, oh, I see you've met Maisie Gibbons. How long has Maisie been at this school? Bree's kids are grown.
Yeah, there's at least like at least a 10-year age gap then. Yeah. Danielle is 15.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And well, it's not that unreasonable. There's a 10-year age gap between us. Like,
don't you get sick of being a school school queen by the time you've been there as a parent for 10 years, though? So when an opportunity comes up to make the costumes for the play, Lynette jumps at it. So it looks like whoever was going to do it before hurt themselves and can't finish the costumes now. And Lynette's like, I know how to sew. I'll do it. And basically, as soon as she's finished saying it, she doesn't even wait like 10 seconds. And she's like, now that I'm doing the heavy lifting, by the way, can we change this end?
Yeah.
And this gets her on Maisie's real bad side. Maisie hates it. And then she kind of gets support from some of the other parents as well while she's saying this. So she's entered up into this kind of mean girl battle with Maisie.
Yeah, which is really weird. I just, like, don't understand the appeal of wanting to even get this involved. Like, just let the ending be the ending. Like, you don't have to put in the work. You don't have to do anything. But you're going to decide you're going to do costumes for this entire thing. Yeah. Just so the wolf can die.
Yeah, exactly. She was so dedicated to the cause. I guess maybe she was more, like, not willing to let Maisie step all over her.
Because we also see Lynette talking about this with, like, her little poker group, right?
Mm.
And she's talking about how men fight differently and she kind of appreciated that better and missed that kind of a thing. I think she just misses, like, being with adults and doing, like, work like that, like, high stakes things, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. She's often reflecting on, like, oh, I used to run a company and now I just look after some kids and I'm struggling with it kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's right.
They take a vote and they agree that ending's going to go back to the same ending that they all agreed, the original ending. And next thing we see with Lynette is, like, she's trying to get all these costumes done and everything, but she's struggling because she's, you know, haphazardly just agreed to do the costumes even though she's already, like, drowning in work.
Yeah.
Raising four kids with no support.
Mm.
She's like, yeah, I'll do the costumes. And then she's struggling. And she doesn't put, like, some fluff on top of her hat. And Maisie's like, I'm going to cut the oak trees then to make your workload a lot lighter.
Yeah.
Which bitchy move.
Mm.
She's like, the forest is too full. They can work backstage.
Yeah.
Where the real action is.
But also you can tell that this isn't about the kids at all for Maisie then. Like, if you're willing to make some kids sad over this stupid little rivalry, you know that the kids are not what's important to her at all. It is just a power trip.
Okay, so she's struggling at this stunt. And then someone who is apparently like a super mum who's like painting the sets, taking care of her three kids and still doing all these other clubs and whatever, goes to help her. She's like, oh, I'm going to stay and help you for as long as I can. But, you know, I have 25 mini quiches to make tonight. So can't do anything. And Lynette's kind of just like, how,
like,
do you
go to Costco. You know? Just go to Costco and get your 25 mini quiches.
I know. They're delicious, first of all. And second of all, so much easier and probably cheaper than the ingredients of you buying it. So
yeah.
But Super Mum is not going to do that. She makes it from scratch. And so Lynette's just like in awe of this woman. Like, how do you do this? Like, you know, what's your secret? Her secret is drugs. She takes her kids' ADD medication. And she's also like, do you want some so you can, like, keep up? And that's like, no, I took some crack earlier, so I don't want to
mix. I actually love this line. I laughed so much.
I know, same.
Yeah, so Lynette initially says no because she doesn't want it to mix with her crack. But when she gets home later that night and she's, like, really struggling, she mixes it with her crack. Like, so we remember from a couple of episodes ago, she'd had that medication around that she didn't end up giving her kids. So she's taken it and she, like, not only finishes the costumes, but she, like, cleans her whole house. She's winning.
Her house is immaculate. She's, like, cleaning her staircase with Q-tips.
The next thing that happens to poor Lynette is that she gets to the show. Everything's done. She feels great about getting all the costumes done and in time for the show. That Maisie lady comes back over to her and she's like, oh, sorry, there's been a mistake. You're not going to be credited for the work that you've done for the costumes.
She was being so sly about it too. Like, she obviously did that on purpose, but she was like, oh, they made a mistake and you won't be credited? And Lynette's like, who's they?
Yeah.
Like, well, it was me.
Yeah.
I was in charge of that and I didn't do it, and I didn't tell them.
Lynette still, for the sake of her kids, took that one. But what got to her was when she was walking away, she heard that Maisie lady tell someone else that the hats look like roadkill.
Yeah, and it was the hat that she insisted she put fur on. It was the hat that Lynette was like, I'm not going to put fur on it. I don't have enough time. She made up with the fur on it and then she said it looked like roadkill. So Lynette lost her mind. Fairly.
And turned into that catch me outside chick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. And that's like, let's take this outside. Take what? She's like, I'll let you throw the first punch.
Yeah. Yeah. And it reflects back on what Arzum was saying about how Lynette saw the way that men and women approached confrontation. So she said that, you know, women were more sneaky and, you know, kind of underhanded, which is what Maisie was being in this scene.
And then she said men are more kind of upfront and they'll just punch it out, which is what Lynette was doing in this scene. So it was like the two different approaches to confrontation and also like the approach that she would typically take in the workplace, I guess, where she just kind of confronted someone.
Like, I can't explain to you guys how much I like this scene. I felt it was like very in character for Lynette.
Mm. I liked Lynette's storyline in this. But yeah, I don't understand why she'd volunteered to do all the costumes for a whole production when she literally has no time for anything. Last episode, she was like, I don't have time to wash my face. And now she's like, I'm going to do a whole costume production. So that's all that happens with Lynette, right?
Yep.
Cool. Do we want to go on to...
Gabrielle,
yeah.
Yeah, let's go Gabby.
Gabby.
So what does Gabby start out doing?
Poor little Gabby unsuspectingly walks outside her house and a taxi pulls up.
Yes.
And who's to come outside? It's Mama Solis.
Oh, I love Mama Solis so much. So yeah, so Mama Solis comes for a surprise visit. Gabby had no idea that she was coming. Yeah, surprising quotation marks, because we find out that Carlos called her because he suspects that Gabby is cheating on him. And he doesn't have any evidence. Like, I don't know if it was the sock fiasco or not, but he says he doesn't have any evidence, but it's a feeling that he has. And he's asked his mum to come along and keep an eye on her. And I guess he also trusts his mum's judgment. So he's asking for his mum kind of on her views on what's happening. So yeah. What I didn't like about this initial bit is that Carlos kind of gets emotional and basically starts crying when he's talking about all this stuff to his mum. And she kind of slaps him and is like, no, yeah. We don't get emotional. Like, yeah. He's allowed to have feelings, bro. Yeah, he's allowed to have feelings.
If he thinks his wife is like falling out of love with him and is cheating on him, he's allowed to be upset.
Yeah. But my comment to this is, yeah, I really like that he did make that connection and could see that things weren't going well. But my comment here is, you need to be talking about this to your wife, not to your mother. You don't call your mother and say, hey, this is happening in my marriage. I think things aren't going well. Can you come and keep an eye on my wife? No, you pull your wife aside and you say, hey, I can feel some distance between us. Like, what is happening? Because he also promised her like 2 episodes ago that he was going to try and then didn't do anything besides buy her a car. So yeah. Like, maybe he can follow that up and say, what's going on? Like, I feel like there's a space here. He can even approach her and say, I don't know, I feel like you might be, you know, deceiving me or whatever, or you're not in the marriage or whatever. Like, you don't have to use those exact words, but there's ways that you can bring about the conversation. And, yeah, like, definitely. Your mother is not one of the people that is in your relationship. Your relationship is between two people and your mother is not one of them.
Well, so. Evidently she is, because she got to pick the wedding band. She got to pick the house colour. She got to pick everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she's in that relationship more than him.
Yeah, and that's, like, a problem to start with. Like, if you're choosing your mum's picks over your wife who actually lives there, like, obviously that's going to cause problems and they should see that.
Yeah, that should have been a red flag before you got married. If you're like trying to get married and she's picking the band and the house and everything, I'm not living here with you, bye.
Yeah, but I guess she stayed quiet because she was like marrying rich, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Actually. So I could deal with a yellow house if I was marrying rich.
Yeah, agree. I don't care what color my house is.
Also, I think the house colour is cute. So
yeah, I like the house colour too. Yeah, so then I guess Mama Solis is like attached to Gabby's hip from then on, and she wants to do everything that Gabby does.
As she's trying to find excuses to leave there, Mama Solis is like, where are you going? And she's like, I'm going to go buy lingerie. And she's like, I need bras. She's like, I'm going to get a facial. I have a face. I love that.
So, yeah, she was struggling to come up with excuses. And when they do go shopping together, I really love that scene that they went shopping together. And Mama Solis is kind of trying to talk Gabby into, like, having a kid, because she's like, oh, you know, it will help you kind of feel fulfilled and it'll give you something to do. It's like, first of all, that's not a reason.
Void in your life.
Yeah. First of all, having something to do is not a reason to have a kid. Like, oh, I'm bored, I'll just have a kid.
Yeah.
But anyway, Gabby goes on a rant. And it's quite funny. She goes on a rant where she's like, I'm actually very fulfilled. Like, I don't need to have a kid. I don't want to have a kid. I'm very fulfilled. And she storms off. And Mama Solis is like to everyone around her, don't worry about my daughter-in-law. She's very fulfilled.
So good.
So she ends up missing that day on meeting John, and John's angry at her about it because he spent all his like lunch money on the hotel room.
Yeah,
on the motel room.
And 1 month's worth of lunch money.
Yeah. So like, yes, exactly. You can see that this is problematic. And she's like, no, just wait for me. Like, I'll make it work. I'll meet you. Because he's suggesting that maybe they might want to cool it. Yeah, they might want to cool it with what's going on. And he isn't really cool with, like, not being able to see her, etc. And it also seems like he might be starting to see other people, because we see him kind of go over to Danielle's house. And
But don't worry, they're in the abstinence club.
And Gabby literally spits out her coffee when she hears this, because she knows what he's been up to. So there's a bit of like a tension there of like John's pulling away from her as she can't make these things, and she's trying to kind of keep him. So she's trying to make it to catching up with him and trying to ditch her mother-in-law. And one of the first things she does is she gets her mother-in-law basically arrested in a mall by framing her. So they go in to try some stuff. She gets the tightest dress she can find to try and get her mother-in-law to try on. Then while she's struggling with that dress, she shoves a blouse in her bag and takes off. And while Mama Solis is kind of chasing her down, she gets flagged by security and hauled off. And then Gabby runs off and is able to meet John.
Yeah, like 3 centimeters away. Like she's literally kissing John 3 centimeters away.
I know.
When Nita is being detained.
You're still out in public. You're at a shopping mall. Everyone you know is there.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. It's so public. And her mother-in-law is just like 10 meters away. Like they could have decided not to hold her and been like, yeah, she's old and crazy. Just let her go. Like she doesn't know what's happening. So she's engaging like really risky behavior. Not to mention that the person she's meeting is underage.
Gabby goes one step further in her little scheme of like deceit and tells her husband that his mom might be confused, and it's like getting old with her, like getting on in her old age and becoming more confused. And I'm like, she's literally implying that this lady is going batshit.
Yeah.
And like she's okay doing this.
Yeah.
It felt wrong to me.
It was like, wrong.
Yeah.
And then not only that, but she goes one step further. So she finds out kind of unintentionally that Mama Solis has a gambling problem, or she's got a history of gambling problems rather. So she takes Mama Solis to a little household game with the other housewives, and Mama Solis cleans them up. So she first suggests playing for money, and then she like literally cleans them up. And then when she's telling Carlos about this, he's like really worried that she was gambling, because it's like a slippery slope, right? Because she had these problems, and if she starts now, she might not be able to rein it in. And what Gabby does next is like highly unethical, because knowing that Mama Solis has this problem, she literally baits her, takes her to the front of a casino, and is like, oh, actually, I can't have lunch at the moment. I have to go something to the mall. And, like, just tempts Mama Solis to want to stay there and gamble. She runs off and she does, just so she can go meet John. Well, Mama Solis accidentally spends $15,000 on Carlos's card, and she's freaking out because she's spent Carlos's money. And then Gabby bluffs to her, like, she's pretending to be on her side and being like, oh, how about we don't tell Carlos about it. Yeah.
We'll pay off the card.
Yeah, we'll make up for it. I'll cover for you. And she makes it look like she's helping out Mama Solis when she literally baited her with her actual weakness, which is like not a mild thing. Like really gambling disgusting. Addiction. Yeah, gambling addiction is a serious issue. And also she can go have an affair with a high school kid. Like it's highly destructive and highly self-involved.
Yes, it really is. I was not Team Gabby these episodes.
No, last not episode, Team Gabby at all. Gabby
because she was a super genius, but not this episode.
No, no, not these episodes. These episodes, I'm Team Mama Solis because she's hilarious.
I know. She is.
I really like that character.
So it's almost like Gabby and Mama Solis come to a bit of an understanding. Like Mama Solis starts to go, oh, yeah, Gabby actually does care about
at least her husband, and maybe she's not a concern. Yeah. And she even goes so far as to kind of start saying this to Carlos, and Carlos is like, phew, like, I'm relieved, because she really was worried about you too when I told her about your gambling problem. And Mama Solis, everything clicks for her then. Like, she finds out that Gabby did this on purpose.
Yeah.
So.
She knew from the very beginning.
She knew, and she's a little witch.
Yes. So earlier in the episodes, Carlos is talking to his mum as well. And he's like, you know, I'm going sick trying to figure out who this person is that she could be sleeping with, blah, blah, blah. Do you think it's that guy? And she's like, no, don't worry about anyone she's comfortable speaking to in public. It's the people she doesn't speak to you need to worry about.
Yeah.
And then after all of this, Mama Solis is sitting on the porch knitting, and she – like bumps slightly into John and just like does the weirdest face ever where she side eyes him and then pretends she's staring at Mail and like walks up the stairs.
Yeah.
And I think it clicks for Mama Solis.
Yep. She's realized who it is. Correct.
Also, I don't really have much to say about this scene other than I really liked Mama Solis's? Solis's really menacing knitting in episode 5 where she's like saying, I'll do anything to protect my son.
Yes. Well, yeah, she kind of implies that, she implied that she killed her ex-husband.
Yeah, I know.
Because he cheated with a waitress and then told Carlos that he ran away with the waitress.
It's not that he cheated with a waitress. It's because he beat Carlos one time.
Oh, no, that's true. Yeah, that is true. That is why she ended up doing it. Yeah,
but that's the excuse she gave Carlos, like to say that that's what he ran away with. But he was an alcoholic and abused them both, so.
Yeah, she kind of used that as a point to prove to Gabby that she'll do anything to protect Carlos.
I believe it. She's a bit of a baddie.
I believe it too. So, yeah, so I feel like things are going to heat up for Mama Solis and Gabby in the next few episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And does that leave us with Bree?
That leaves us with Bree.
It does.
It's gonna be Bray.
In this episode, Bree's kids are also not paid for, so therefore they're not in this show. They've gone to the mountains for some reason.
Yeah, as you do.
So Bree's got no kids and take part in a neighborhood watch. She was telling Rex about it.
Mm.
And this is where we learned that Bree is a member of the NRA and has 4 guns.
Yeah, I know. Because she tries to convince Rex to come home and she's like, oh, I'm so worried about all these break-ins. Like, I wish you were here to protect me. And he's like, you've got 4 guns. I would expect you to protect me. So good.
I believe it. Like, if I had to go to any of these women's houses in an apocalypse, it would be Breeze. I feel like she runs a tight ship. She's going to keep us alive and she has the goods.
And she, you know that she'd have like all these food, like she'd have preserves and whatnot. Like her house would be the best. And then she's loaded like with ammunition. So, yeah, safest house on the street. Do not go to Susan's house. She'll burn it down.
With a measuring jug.
Yeah. So Bree goes to visit Paul Young, but he's not home, and she sees like Zach cleaning the floor where Mary Alice Young died, and he's gone over it so much that he's kind of like created a little circle, like he's cleaned through the varnish and he's basically like sanding the floor at this stage.
So you're telling me that he's tarnished the varnish?
Yeah, he's tarnished the varnish.
So I think like Bree sort of like feels a connection to him at that stage, that he's cleaning his emotions away.
Yes, because she does end up telling him a creepy story about how her mother died. And she basically did the same thing. So what happened to Bree was apparently it was Christmas time and her mother got hit by a car. She was crossing the road to deliver a pie to someone or something like that. Nobody saw and she was hit by a car. Her family all took them to the hospital, but they left Bree at home. And all she could do was basically wash the blood from the street and she felt better once it was done. And I think that is also a reference to kind of all of the issues that she has now with cleaning. Like things feel better to her when they're clean. And I guess this is some of the problems that she's having with Rex, which I wonder how that ties into milk bottle chugging Bree that she was when they first met. So something's happened that's kind of made these triggers worse, I feel like, along the way.
The milk chugging Bree could be like an act of rebellion. And now that she's settled into her role as like homemaker, wife, you know, she wants to be the best. Like, she's got control issues, we all know that, but like, I feel like she's using this as a way to control like her changing environment, like her kids growing up, her husband, and her entering like a new phase in their life, etc.
Well, I think that the whole carefree milk chugging Bree stops to exist because they were in college, they were newly engaged and everything like that, but then she married a doctor who's never home, and she was, like Lynette, left with the kids to herself, and she had to maintain the house by herself because he's always busy and at the hospital and stuff.
Mm.
So she got more stressed, and the only way she knew how to fix things was to keep things clean.
Yeah, I think so. Both solid theories. So the next thing that happens is, yeah, so they're at the dinner, and Zach, I guess, after hearing this, starts to feel a bit more comfortable with Bree, because she also says, like, you know, this is the first time I've told anyone this story. And Zach says, those are the most interesting things, the stories that we never tell other people. And he starts to feel a bit comfortable in this moment. And he tells Bree that he knows why his mum killed herself, and it was because of something he did. And then he kind of, I think, has regrets over saying this, and he kind of freaks out, and then he leaves.
But they were talking about how much they loved Christmas and stuff. So
yeah.
The next day, Bree wants to know more about what's been happening. She wants to push and find out some more. So she goes over to invite him over for a little Christmas get-together, basically. Let's go do all the Christmassy things. I'll make old-fashioned eggnog. It'll be great. So she invites him over and everything, but jokes, she actually can't make it because Rex has said, hey, like, let's go to dinner together. And she's obviously trying to fix her marriage, so she prioritizes that. And so she tells Zach, like, sorry, like, we'll do this another time, I promise. Something really important's come up.
Yep.
And off she goes. But when we cut back to the house, she's pulling up with Rex, and there's been a break-in in her house.
Yep. And it's not Mike this time.
It's not Mike this time, but everyone's on edge about this, and there's like a lot of police and stuff around because, you know, there have been break-ins and there's neighborhood watch going around looking for break-ins.
Hmm.
But when they go in, the whole house is like absolutely Christmased up. There's a Christmas tree that he's cut down from their yard, apparently. There's all of their family stockings hung with care over the chimney. Yeah.
So he's his own family's.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's Mary Alice, Young Paul and Zach's stockings all hung up and Christmas lights everywhere. It's like they've just walked into like a winter wonderland, basically.
Mm.
And he's just like, I just really missed my mum kind of a thing, and he's in handcuffs. And Bree says, take them off. We're not going to be pressing charges like right now. Let go of him.
Yeah.
And Paul comes over and seems very angry.
Yeah. Zach's going through some stuff. He's feeling some guilt. We don't really know what's going on, but he's feeling some guilt. He's holding on to some secret that he keeps trying to emerge. Yeah, he's kind of like really reaching out, because even in that moment, and I think he's finding some comfort in Bree, because even in that moment where his dad comes in and yells at him, he reaches out and he holds Bree's hand.
Feels to Zach, but then like later on when Bree goes to knock on their door to make sure Zach's okay, you see Paul on the floor with like a busted lip.
Yeah, because when she approached the door, they were fighting. She could hear them screaming through the door. And then you heard like a big knock, and she was like, oh, what was that? She knocks on the door and Zach answers. And it literally just sounded like one of them died. But I guess the way that it ended was that Zach just straight up punched out Paul.
Yeah, but like that had me thinking, is Zach the bad one or is Paul the bad one?
Well, we don't know. They're both creepy, that's for sure.
They are. They're hella creepy.
Yeah. Poke and a lost horse. Why can't they both be terrible?
Exactly. Well, I don't know, because Zach is like, oh, I feel really guilty because my mum killed herself because of something I did. Meanwhile, Paul is like, yeah, don't write me an obituary if I don't kill you first.
Yeah, I know.
So they're really hard to read. Like, you can't tell. could go either way at this stage.
I have a theory when Mary Alice killed herself. She wasn't safe in that house.
She really wasn't. She was like, either I take my own life or they're going to take it for me.
I know. She's like, I'll just get this over with.
Yeah.
Literally. Beat them to the punch, literally.
Yeah, and then there's the mystery of the body in the crate. So I guess we'll find that out as we keep going as well. The tangent.
Allison.
Yeah. I know. That's Allison's third funeral.
I know.
Anyway, I think that's all for the episode 5 for Bree. In episode 6, it's back to kind of like her struggles with Rex. Rex is like...
They're in therapy, first off.
Yeah. So if we remember in the last episode, Rex wanted to start having private sessions.
Yes.
Bree was like, you know, I suggest you take the moral high ground with him if it's about sex or whatever. But in this scene, in this episode, we kind of pick back up from that and they're having a meeting with Dr. Goldfine.
They're like, let's talk about sex, baby.
Yeah, basically. And Rex wants to talk about sex. Let's get it.
Yeah.
It rhymes. So he's saying that he's unhappy with their sex life because he thinks that Bree isn't active enough in it. And he doesn't feel she's emotionally disconnected. And he thinks that that's impacting him. And he suggests the weirdest thing I've ever heard in my life, but he wants to have a sex surrogate, which is like somebody that's going to be there with them while they're having sex to help them work on their intimacy issues. And Bree is rightfully horrified. And she's like, what the heck is this shit? I'm leaving. And so what happens is with Bree, she ends up running into Dr. Goldfine when they're both dinner by themselves. So they're both at this fancy looking restaurant. They're both having dinner by themselves. And Bree is like, oh, like we're both here. Should we like eat together? And Dr. Goldfine is like, no, I don't think so. Like, it's weird. I don't socialize with my clients.
It's inappropriate.
It's inappropriate. Yeah. And Bree's like just eyeing him off from the side. That he's trying to read his book.
Sad puppy staring at him.
She's sad puppy staring at him, giving him the side eyes. Dr. Goldfine ends up saying, fine, like we can eat together, but you've got to pay it for me like it's a session. But don't worry, I'll pay for my own food. So they end up having this session in the restaurant and Bree kind of understands that, no, actually she does like sex and she's not a prude.
She likes to lick a man's nipple.
She goes into vivid detail. Yeah. So Bree decides, what the heck, like I'm going to give it a go to try revamp my marriage. And she dresses in the skimpiest, sexiest little red lingerie covered only by a fur coat.
And her heels,
and she goes to surprise Rex.
It's like that Nicki Minaj song. Remember when I showed up with just panties on under my coat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was written about Bree. So Bree did that.
Yeah.
And she shows up at Rex's disgusting hotel room.
Oh my god, it's so grotty.
And she tries to trying to reinvigorate their marriage, I guess, trying to seduce him. And Rex is eating this stupid burrito and he literally throws it aside and it's like dangling off the nightstand. Bree's like trying to get into it, but also she's noticing that this burrito is about to drip. So she's like fighting the urge not to push the burrito back. And Rex is like, just leave it, just get into the moment with me. And Bree's trying her hardest, but in the end, she can't. So she takes a break. She saves the day, moves the burrito, and then tries to get back into it. And he's like, nah, get that.
Where were we before I scooped this cheese?
Yeah, exactly. And basically he's like, nah, screw you and how hot you look. Like, I don't want any of this because why couldn't you just let the cheese go? This is exactly why we have issues. And just sends her packing on her way. And Bree's like, well, obviously you've never had to clean a cheese stain.
Like, why is it so one-sided, though? Like, why does she need to change everything and compromise everything? Like, she's making the effort to be there. Just let her move the burrito and enjoy it.
I know, exactly. No. Like, and I think Bree raises a really good point about that afterwards as well, because she basically says that to him, like, if you were willing to turn me down at that instance just because I couldn't control myself with the burrito, like, there's something wrong with you. Because that's not normal. She thinks that he is hiding something and he wants something that he's not able to tell her. So she kind of remembers all these instances where he was about to tell her something and then he kind of stopped. And she's like, just freaking do it. Like, just tell me what you want. and
And I'll do it. Like, I'll be there with you, basically.
Yeah.
Like, we're a married couple. I can't do it if you don't tell me what it is.
Yeah. And so, like, she's, like, trying her hardest to save this marriage. And, like, Rex is, I guess, retreating further and further away. That's how I'm seeing it at this stage.
But also, I want to point out that something we didn't mention at first, but we did briefly talk about, when he comes over to take the kids to the mountains.
Yeah.
Bree's like, oh, can you stay with me? Because, you know, I'm scared. He's like, you know, you have to accept the fact that marriage counseling just might not work out, Bree. Like, you're going to have to get used to being alone. I'm sorry, that sucks, but that's what you're going to have to get used to, just in case. And he goes to eat, like, a sandwich that she made. And he's like, no. She's like, no, marriage counseling might not work out. You have to get used to shitty food.
Yeah, exactly. Good call.
Is that all that happens with Bree?
Yeah, that's all that happens with all of them.
Yeah.
So, Suna, you had the worst sister story for us. You told us to remind you of it.
This week, this is unrelated, but this week, all week, I have slept funny and have had a sore neck. And so I'm kind of new to getting massages. I don't go very often because I had a really bad first experience where some man almost broke me.
And didn't he burp on you as well?
He burped and farted while he was massaging me. And he was so strong, like, he almost broke me apart. So that was my first experience with a massage, and I don't go very often, but I was real sore and I was like, okay, like, let's go get massages. So my husband's like, oh, I'll get one with you because I've been quite sore as well. So we decided we're going to do massages together, but he goes more frequently than me. So he sends me a link to the place he goes and he's like, oh, do you want to book it? And I was like, yeah, I'll book it. I don't know how, but I still failed even with a link, and I booked it at a different place. But
how?
I don't know, but did he
send you the wrong link?
No, he sent me the right link. We went back and checked. I did first accuse him of sending me the wrong link, and I was like, I clicked the link you sent me. I don't know what happened because I did not use that link. Anyway, I booked into the wrong place, but I didn't realize until we got there. So we got there and there's already other people waiting, which is first of all weird because it's not that big of a place. And I'm like, oh, I had a booking for 8 o'clock. And she's like, are you sure you booked here? And I was like, yeah, I'm sure. Like, obviously. But I'll check my email in case I booked the wrong date. And I check my email and it's like, oh, sorry, I booked somewhere else. So I just went in there, basically was like, I ain't getting anything done by you, and left. It was so awkward.
So did you end up getting massages? Did you make your appointment in time?
Yes, because conveniently the place I booked was literally 2 streets away, and we just ran there and we got our appointment. And it was a new place we hadn't tried before, so it ended up working out well because this was a new place we hadn't tried before, and they were really good. They had free chocolates, so yeah. You know.
Oh, nice.
Success. Cool. Well, mini worst sister story about couples massages.
Is it the story I was about to tell?
Probably, because it's a couples massage I did with you.
So, yeah, I think it is.
It wasn't really a massage, but it was a facial. So I had this I had this voucher that my mother-in-law got me for you know, a massage or facial, whatever. And instead of getting a whole body massage for myself, I thought it'd be nice that we split it and me and Adzum both go get a facial, right? So me and Adzum going to get a facial. It was really funny. So they put us in this dark room and, like, we lie down, we're next to each other. But they're also, no, like,
the room before... wasn't dark. We had like, things over our eyes and couldn't see.
Yeah, that's true. The room wasn't dark. We had our eyes closed. But also,
well,
but also, jokes, like,
on them, because that's the worst thing you can do with you two, put you in a room together laying next to each other and close your eyes.
But it was also really, really the
worst thing for you.
But it was really funny because, like, you know, we're idiots, right? But they're, like, so professional, and, like, they're like, what are your skin goals for this session? And I'm like,
fill out this form.
I'm like, I don't have skin goals. Like, I don't know what you want from me.
So, we were literally Mama Solis. We were like, I have a face.
I have a face. So we go lie down and they're doing our facials and stuff. And they did this bit. So they're playing the soothing music, whatever. And then they're like,
okay, we're going to leave you for like 10 minutes for it to soak or relax or whatever. And our two facial people leave the room and...
I hope.
We hope. And then you hear like this like symphony of bone cracking. As we both start kind of cracking our knuckles, cracking our toes. Just like...
Everything in sync.
But it was everything. All in sync. It suddenly sounded like someone was making popcorn in the room. Like, as soon as they closed the door, we were both like, and then, of course, when we both realized this, we both start laughing like idiots.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so funny. So what was your guys' worst sister stories? I think, Sadie, you said you had one as well.
Yeah, so we had just moved into that last house that we were in, right? Suna had made a friend, and her friend and Suna decided they're going to go to the mall. And I begged, borrowed, and pleaded, and stole. And I was like, I'm going to that mall with them.
Oh, so you were Mama right? Solis, yes.
Yeah. So
they find an affair.
So Mum finally ragged on Suna enough that Suna had to take me to this mall with her. And while we're there, I'm just following them around and I'm just like looking at things and like someone was giving out like free samples of stuff. Another one was giving out like pamphlets and I was like, oh, this mall is so cool because like you get all these free things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, as I walk into the mall, I just keep collecting free things and then I finally get to some place that Suna looks at me. She's like, where did all this come from? And I was like, oh, it's the free samples that they were giving. Right?
Yeah.
They weren't free samples. They were just sitting in random kiosks. Yeah, and then you were, like, in full panic mode because, like, you were a kid too.
Yeah.
You were in full panic mode. I was in full panic mode. So we just left the whole bunch of stuff that I accidentally stole by one of the rubbish bins. Like, not in the rubbish bin, on the bench next to the rubbish bin.
Yeah, I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, no, it was a formative moment for me because now I don't let my kids touch anything apart from my hands when we're walking through the mall.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my worst sister story.
Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of Whisperia Lane. Join us next week for another Shadewood and then we'll be back again with Whisperia Lane after that. As usual, if you've got anything you want to say to us, you can reach us on our socials. So we're at Sister Worst on Twitter and at Worst is the Shire on everything else. So that's Reddit, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. I'll wrap us out with a hada bum as usual. On the count of three, guys.
Yep.
1, 2, 3, hada bum.
Hada bum.